Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Vav. I feel very bad. I forgot to mention yesterday that it was also the Ramchal's Yortzeit, such a choshev Yortzeit, and I just neglected to mention it. But okay, so we're holding today, and even though the daf is Ayin Vav, we're still holding the Mishnah at the bottom of Ayin Heyomid Beis. And as you would naturally suspect after having gotten this far in the Masechet, once we do the entire Mishnah Klal Gadol, and at the very end, at the last of the Malachas, we manage to remember, oh yes, and then there's also that Malacha Gerua, the Hamotzim Rishus L'Rishus, we just go right back to being bad boys and discussing nothing else but Hotza'ah. So what we're going to do right now is expand on the Mishnah, but we want to expand on the first part of the Mishnah. Oh, no, sorry. We're going to go to the last thing. And we're going to talk about what is the shiur of Hotzah. So if there's a klal gadol on Shabbos, it has to do with the lamed tes malachas. If there's a klal katan on Shabbos, it only has to do with Hotzah. So what is that klal katan? You remember that we spoke before about why we use the word klal gadol as opposed to a klal katan and what the issues would be. But in any event, we finally get to this va'od klal acher amru. And that is that kol hakasher lahatznia umatzniin kamohu, so what the Mishnah is saying here, at least according to the Tanakhama, this Shita, is that if you have something that is normally fit for use, and therefore it is something that you would keep around, so it has to be kosher l'atznia. So that means that it's a commonly used substance, not that you decided to use something that people would look at you like you're out of your mind. Umatzniin kamohu. Now note that the word in Hebrew for amount is kamut, right? Kamut is amount. So when we say matzniin kamohu, we mean this is the amount that people would normally keep around and not throw into a garbage pail if it was left over or something. They would keep it. So that's the matzniin kamohu. And then somebody carried that out, then he would be chayev echatas for it. But if it's either not something that would generally be used, so it's eino kosher l'atznia, or even if it is used, but not in such amounts, and most people would just throw it out, or ein matzniin kamohu in this amount, kamuto would be the kamohu, and then you took it out, then only someone who actually had set it aside and put it in a little bottle in his medicine cabinet. Now he takes it out on Shabbos. Because of the fact that he was machshiv it, by being matznia it, he would be chayav if he took it out, but not anybody else. And there, eino chayav ela hamatznio. So in other words, the Mishnah is saying a number of things. First of all, it's saying that there is a standard shear, which is whatever is the standard amount that you would keep. And it's also saying that you could be mechayev yourself apparently on anything that to you is choshev, which would mean that the first statement in the Mishnah is just to establish what it is that a regular person would be chayev. And the next part of the Mishnah is talking about someone who specifically set aside. That's what it would look like. But that's not really the case, because you'll note that the point of the first part of the Mishnah is to say that there is an applicable amount that would apply to anybody, whether or not he thinks such an amount is choshev. So what the Mishnah is actually doing is splitting things into three different types of individuals. So we're talking about anyone at all, according to the Tanakhama, even though this is a person who is very rich and would never consider keeping around a little bit of this stuff if it was left over, he would throw it out and toss it. But nonetheless, since this is the standard, anybody would be chayev on standard, normal usage of people, even though you yourself don't care about it. But on the other hand, you would not be chayev if it was less than the standard, even if you did think it was choshev, unless you actually went ahead, were machshiv it by putting it in something and storing it, and then you go out and you take it out, then you've done enough to be machshiv something, And therefore, you would be chayev on it. But the very fact that you took it out and you needed it at this particular occasion is certainly not ipso facto a reason why you would be chayev. That's for sure. So only the matzniya would be chayev. Furthermore, only the matzniya would be chayev. In other words, the fact that something was important and had been stored does not mean that anybody who takes out that thing that was important, he would be chayev on. Only the individual who made it important in the first place, he's the one that would be chayev, and only if he actually did something to set its importance in place. Now, that's a complex way of saying things, but this is what the Mishnah is saying. Now, this, when you say kol hakasher lahatznia, I mean, you'd have to be talking about, if you're saying something that is not usable. I mean, if we're talking about a general sense, that means that we're taking a large sample of humanity, all right? So we'll take 100,000 people. You're telling me that I would want to take out something, be chayev on Shabbos, that out of those 100,000 people, we wouldn't find anybody interested in? Like, what kind of thing would that be when you're saying it's bechlal, not even kosher latznia? What would that be? Rav Papa says, well, I mean, let's say you have blood of a nida. What would you possibly use that for? Now, we'll see that that's not such a crazy thing because you may need it for laboratory work. Or, in the case of the Gemara's time, actually, animals could, like a cat, you have a cat. A cat could be fed human blood, and you mix it with the cat food to give him iron and whatever. But, I mean, it's certainly not a normal usage. Whereas Mar Ukva says, no. It's got to be atze asherah. Now, atze asherah, you have to get rid of. You have a mitzvah to be ma'abedin. So not only is it asur ba'na, and therefore you cannot possibly conceive of a use for it, because it's prohibited to find a use for it, it's also supposed to be gotten rid of. Now, that is an extreme. But that would make more sense if that's what the Mishnah is saying. You will not find in any sample somebody who would be looking at this and consider it to be kosher latznia. Because the word kosher latznia does not mean standard matznia. Kosher latznia. So Mandi Omar of Papa, who said that even dam nida is considered to be not kosher latznia. Obviously, atse asherah, where you're not even allowed to be matznia, is obviously not going to be chayim. But if you go to the extreme of Mar Ukva, and you're saying that the Mishnah does not mean something that somebody couldn't find a use for, it means something that you're not even allowed to find a use for. So there, the fact that you could find some wild use for the most outrageous substance, like Dam Nida, I mean, so you got one Meshuggah out of 100,000 people who's ready to give Dam Nida Matzniah Le'Lishunra. He'd make cat food, mix it with his cat food. That would be sufficient, according to Mar Ukva, because Eino Kasher Latznia is a lot, according to him, would mean completely not kasher. And this is kasher. Fine. Why, in fact, does Rav Papa say that according to him, that it's not considered to be something? I mean, according to Rav Papa, how does he define the word kasher? I mean, if people will use it, then why not? Would it not be matzniya like Mar Ukva said Lashunra? No. Because he says there's another standard that we have to apply over here. That is not simply whether it's prohibited or not, but whether it might be damaging. So since there was a belief that Kivan Decholsha, a human whose blood is eaten by an animal becomes weakened by that fact. So therefore, it is not considered to be kasher lahatznia, according to Rav Papa. But clearly, both Rav Papa and Mar Ukva understand the meaning of kasher to be very, very high standard. You'd have to cross, I mean very, very low, but a high standard of not being kasher at all. Om Reb Yosef Rebbe Chanina, but note that this Mishnah, that says that if it's something that is normally used by people, then anybody is going to be chayev, because that's the implication of the Mishnah. I'm giving you absolute shiurim. Not everybody holds to that. And actually, Rabbi Shimon disagrees, because we're going to see in the next parak that Rabbi Shimon says the shiurim that are mentioned are mentioned only for people who actually store these things. So then that means that in our Mishnah, what we're talking about over here would be things that the overall klal is for normal kind of people and normal kind of use. But if somebody is rich and he would never use this amount, he would toss it into his garbage bin, he would not be chayiv. Now, even though what it seems to be saying over here is lo omru kol ha-shiur mer halalu ela lamatzni ehem, would mean the minimal shiurim, that's not the case. What we're going to see is that there are three different issues that we have to determine. One of them is standard usage. One of them is occasional usage, but it's a reasonable occasional use. So in other words, it's something that you would use when your kid gets a scratch or something. It's not something that normally you would take out, but anyone in those circumstances would take it out. That's called occasional. And then we have the specific use of the matznia. What our Mishnah is saying is that we can determine standardized usages, but according to Rabbi Shimon, those standard usages are for standard people. Furthermore, when the Mishnah goes ahead and says that the person who stores less than that is chayev, that's not really true. It's not any amount less than that. It's the occasional use shiurim that are going to be expressed in the next perek. So this is our perek of the klalim, and we're going to see in the next Mishnah, it's going to give us an example of the klalim in terms of foodstuffs, which is easy to standardize because of the fact that they're used for animals, different materials. But the truth is that we need to understand that there are also other types of usages that are not the standard usages, but are occasional usages. So in effect, even though in this Mishnah it's not clear because we haven't told you what the shiurim are, in effect, Rabbi Shimon argues on 2 points of our Mishnah. Number one, this is how Rashi understands it. Number one, Rabbi Shimon disagrees that these shiurim are absolute. He says the shiurim of standard are for standard people. There's no such thing as one shiur fits all. And therefore, if a certain person would not be machshev this because he's very wealthy, he's not included in the standard idea of matzniin kamohu. That he disagrees with. And the second part of the Mishnah he disagrees with. The second Mishnah, part of the Mishnah implies that if you take any amount, which to you is chashev, less than the occasional amount. So it's not something, let's say you have a little tiny bottle of iodine in case your kid falls, you want to use an antiseptic. I'm talking about, in the Mishnah, anything at all that you were matznia, which somebody else would look at you and would say, what the heck would you do with that? And now you've got this explanation, which this is something that you're the only guy in the world that would be interested in this kind of thing. According to Rabbi Shimon, you will not be chayev unless it's within the lower level of occasional usages, which we're going to see in the next parak. So there's two completely different issues. Furthermore, says the Gemara, Omer Rabbi Elazar, that when the Mishnah says that if somebody is matznia it, he is chayev if he's matznia it, but nobody else would be, that is also not agreed by everyone. Now, this is the opposite extreme. Because according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, if anybody put something aside and made it choshev, the very fact that it was choshev for that individual means that if somebody else comes along, takes it out of his medicine cabinet and transfers it, I don't need to be the one who put it into the medicine cabinet. I could take advantage of the fact that somebody else had done that, and now it becomes choshev to me if I take it out, which is against the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says, no, only the person that actually did the act that turned it into something, choshev would be chayev. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, the Tanya, klal amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, kol she'eino kasher lahatznia, ve'ein matzniin kamo, v'huchshar lezeh,
shel ze.
something which is either not usually used or is not in an amount that's usable, but to somebody it turned out to be usable, and he put it into a little bottle and was matznia it. If somebody else takes it out, the other person would be chayev b'machshava shel zeh. So we have now three different shitot in the case, the klal of the Mishnah. And now we are ready for our revered Kapitan. You know, I just wanted to warn you that I read an article about a captain who actually turned into a foghorn after a certain amount of time. Better watch out. So, thank you. So, our Mishnah gives us now some examples, let us say. And we're going to talk about the things over here that we can clearly define as being suitable for a particular type of agricultural use. So, hamotzi tevin, somebody carries out tevin, which is a type of straw that you actually, you make this into a food. You take the stalks of the various grains that you've pressed, and you crush them up. That's called tevin. So it's something that is processed. It's not just raw. That is usually used for feeding cows. And therefore, if you take out the shear as one mouthful for a para, one good munch of a cow, that's considered to be a shear. If you take out, on the other hand, etza, we're going to see is camel food. We're going to talk about what it is in the Gemara later. Then it would be kimlo pi gama. That would be as much as a camel would eat. Amir, if you're taking out stalks. So then it would be the amount that is usually eaten by a lamb. Kimlo pi tzeh. If you got nice soft grass, that would be even suitable for a gedi, for a kid, a young goat. And over there, that's the smallest shear. How about leaves of garlic or leaves of onions? Well, then it depends. These things, if they're actually fresh, then they're human food. And if they're human food, then the amount is always, as we spoke about earlier, a grogeret. So that's the amount of a dried fig. But if they're animal food, so they've been dried out, then we go back to the kid. So it's kamlo pigdi. You cannot combine two things that have different shiurim with each other to yield one shear of chiev. Now we're going to be talking about that in the Gemara, whether that's absolutely true or it depends on which direction we're going. By the way, what is this etza stuff? Omer Rav Yehuda, the camel feed that we were referring to as etza, is tevin shel minei kitnis. It's actually straw, but it's straw of different type of legumes that were, so, you know, you've got some hummus and other kinds of beans. It's also the stalks of those things, when dried, are used for camel feed. Now, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he said that if you were motzi tevin kimlo pi para, if your intent at taking out something was for the wrong usage. We said, tevin is a shear of melopi para because it's suitable for a para. Now, suppose somebody intended to take out that shear, but to feed it to a gamal and not to a para. So Rabbi Yochanan says, what's the difference? The shear has nothing to do with your particular determination of the act of hotza'ah that you're doing. A shear is a shear is a shear, and therefore you're chayev. I don't care if you're a nut. Now you want to try feeding this to your camel. Whereas Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Omer Patur. And this is what Rabbi Yochanan said in the night. But we're talking Rabbi Yochanan Hachi. The next morning, he got in the Beis HaMedrash and he said, I made a mistake last night. And actually, Rish Lakish is right. And he was Patur. Omer of Yosef, well, he was really smart that he changed his mind. Shapir Avedahadar. I don't understand. I mean, it's not usable. So if you took it out for something unusable, how would that be an act of otzah if it doesn't mean anything? I'm like, Abai, what are you talking about? Just the opposite. He should never have changed his mind. Why would we look at the particular case if the whole point in the Mishnah is that it's defining shiurim and saying that this is the shiur that is choshev for the hotza'ah, and your particular act is not the act that defines the hotza'ah, which is remarkable, really, if you think about it. How would we have a particular shiur, standardized shiur, of hotza'ah? If the idea of meleches machshavas is that you are doing something that you are working out as being creative, I mean, doesn't it have to be creative? Doesn't it have to actually achieve the thing that you're setting out to do? Nonetheless, the Mishnah is saying we don't measure the usage of the, mute yourself. So, we don't measure the particular thing that you're doing with it, the results of what you're doing. We only measure the act, it's saying over here. So what Rabbi Yochanan said, the way I see it, says Abaye, made more sense before. Because, I mean, if it's a shiur, that's what the Mishnah says. Once you're ready to apply a shiur, a standard, who cares? If we're not looking at the result, then in terms of what you're using it for, we're looking at the act. This is an act of otzah. Is a mouthful of cow feed an act of otzah? Just answer that question. But I don't have a cow. Do I give a hang whether you have a cow? I care about the act of otzah. I can't even imagine why it is Rabbi Yochanan changed his mind. And as a matter of fact, Abaye is so persuasive that the Gemara says, you know what? We had the whole story wrong. What actually happened was that when Ravin came to Bava from Eretz Yisrael, he said that if you're motzi tevin kimlo pi para li gamal, we had the whole thing backwards. What happened is that you took out the shear of tevin for a gamal. There, nobody argued. Kulei amalo pligi dechayev. Of course, you're chayev because what you took out is the standardized shear of the hotza. You know where the machlokas was. The machlokas was in the other direction. You took out a etza, the shear of a pi para. And your intent in feeding it to the para was that, you know, well, this para is going to be good and hungry because I haven't fed him in a long time, so he's going to eat this or bust because I sure ain't going out to buy any of this expensive para feed. And in fact, the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish is in the other direction. Rabbi Yochanan said, you're potter. Whereas Reish Lakish says, you're chayev. Rabbi Yochanan says, you're potter. Because, look, the fact that you will get the para to eat this because it's starving is called achila al yedei hadchak. And therefore, we cannot apply a shiur, which is a standardized shiur. And this is why it's more complex than, as Abaye pointed out, was a mistake in the previous version. It's more complex because there is a standardized shiur of a pi para, correct? Then that pi para standard should apply to anything that the para will eat. If ultimately in these circumstances the para will eat, so then let's be chaya for the pi para. But Rabbi Yochanan says that's not called eating. So the fact that you can, you know, give some type of blood infusion to the para, which is full of nutrition, does not mean that that's the shiur of achila for a para. This is achila yedei hadchak, and it doesn't fit the bill of the amount that a para will eat. This is not the amount that a para will eat. Forget it. Reish Lakish says, why not? Bottom line is it gets the nutrition from it. It's forced to eat it and eats it, and therefore, if in fact this becomes para feed, then the shear is para mouth, and therefore you would be chayev. That we can understand the machlokas. Now, the Mishnah says if you take out amir, which is the straw, so then a lamb would be the shear. Vatanya, but it says in our brayta, kigrogert, which is the amount of a human, says the Gemara, an interesting thing. A lamb eats as much in a mouthful as the human. In other words, the shear of a grogeret that we had for the normal shear of human food is the same as a lamb's food. Why then do we use this shear? Because that's the reason that it's choshev in this case. In other words, the Mishnah is saying, look, it's not choshev because it's a grogeret. It's choshev because a lamb will eat it. Now, it happens to be that that's the same shear, but we want you to understand where that shear is coming from. Then, next case.
We drink as much as a selavat.
As much as a selavan. The Gemara is not machalic between a selavan and a seshachor.
Rebbe Barnea was just kidding.
Oh, you're beating him in his own game. Oh, gosh. Alei shum v'alei bitzalim. So garlic and onion leaves, if they're fresh, then we said it's gogeret. If they're dried, then it's the shear of a gedi. So then it's kemalei pi gedi, which is that tiny amount, kid. Okay, then it says that no shiurim are mitzarif. Why? Because they're different shiurim. You can't be mitzarif things that are different shiurim. Omrad Yosef Rebbechina, now wait a minute. You can't say you can't be mitzarif at all. You could be mitzarif for the chamur, but when we're using the word chamur, we're talking about something that even a smaller amount would be mechayev. So obviously you can't use the type of thing which requires much more volume to fill this requisite space for the thing that requires less volume. But in the other direction, you would be able to. Mitztarfim l'kal shebehem. So in other words, you could use the kidney straw, which would have to be a shear, of a camel's mouth, which is tremendously large. You can't use that to be mashlim the other shiurim, which are much smaller, but you should be able to in the other direction. So you should be able to add, let's say, some of your pipara shear. So you've got grain straw. You should be able to use the kidney straw to fill up the camel's mouth because it is more dense. Now, Tosis points out that this really makes absolutely no sense. What's the difference in the shear if it isn't going to be usable by the camel? I mean, if it's a tziruf of two different things and it's not usable, who cares whether one is chomer or one is kal? It seems silly. So Tosis says that we'll have to make the assumption that the mixture itself is actually usable. So in other words, because of the fact that you have the main camel feed over here, to be mashlim the shear with the other one, the camel will eat it. Our only shaila is whether it should be mitzuraf. So since this thing is actually denser, it should definitely be mitzuraf because its shear would have been smaller. That's his point. Says the Gemara, is that true though? Because chodelo shavu shiarayim mitzarfi at all, the way he's claiming, doesn't it say, of course, the only place to look for this is in Kalim, obviously. So doesn't it say in Kalim, I mean, you think Kalim would have to have something to do with Kalim, right? Nah. We'll find Kalim everywhere, even if we're talking about camel food. Okay. So in the Mishnah in Kalim, we have the following halacha. That habeged, remember, we've learned this many times, the shear of a beged is 3 tvachim by 3 tvachim. This shear of sackcloth, which is much more gross material, in order for it to be mekabel tumas meis, would be 4 by 4. The shear of leather would be 5 by 5 tvachim. The shear of mat, which is made out of reed and such things, is 6 by 6 tvachim. But it says in a braita on that Mishnah that if you want to combine a beged with a sack, or you want to combine a sack with or, or you want to combine an or v'amapat, by the way, it means in that order, which we'll discuss when we get there. So then Rabbi Shimon, the idea over there would be their mitzarif, zeim ze, and Rabbi Shimon explained why they would be mitzarif. Up till now, it sounds good. You could be mitzarif things in that order if you're going to be machmer. But Rabbi Shimon says, no, I'll explain to you why they can be mitzarif. Mipnei shiru'uyin litame moshav. The reason they can be mitzarif, this is a big machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, wherever this comes up, Rashi learns Ru'uyin to be mitzarif for Moshav means that if you make the shear of a tefach al tefach with a combination of patchwork on a back of a chamor, and that's usable for standing on or sitting on, then it would be mitzarif for Tumas Midras, which is unique in that it only requires a tefach al tefach for sitting on. And over there, once it's mekabel Tumas Midras, it will already be metame other tumas, as we learn. So because of that, since it's royal etame midras, it will be mitzarif. Tosfos has the pshat, which is much more fundamental. Tosfos' pshat is that since legabe tumas midras, all has nothing to do with putting everything together. It's that since vis-a-vis tumas midras, all of the shiurim are the same, because over there, the one by one shiur, one tefach by a tefach is sufficient for us to be mitame. Therefore, we can use the shiurim for the correct shiur, 3x3, 4x4, and so on, of being mitzaref, the more powerful material for the lesser material. We can do that because there is a place where they will all be of the same sort. So in other words, what Tosfos is saying is, the tziruf is defined by the relationship of sets to the same tumah. Therefore, if there is a set, namely tumas midras, where all things will share the same shiur, namely tefach al tefach, then you are able to be mitzarev things that are members of different sets, either the 3x3, 4x4, 6x6, and so on, in the event that they're within reach of each other because of the fact that there is a set in which they will match, and that is the tumas midras. Now, that's a much more sophisticated argument. That's how Tosfos understands this Gemara all over. Okay, but in any event, it means that the only reason that we're being mitzaref these things the way Rabbi Shimon is being masber it is because of the fact that there's a place where their set matches, namely tumas midras. So time de ruin la time moshav. But ein ruin in the time in moshav, we would never be mitzaref. So how come over here you're allowing us to get away with being mitzaref? Lo. Omar Rava, and Rava explains that the same thing is true over here about the animal feet. There is a set where they all fit. And what is that? So Rashi, of course, has to explain it l'shitato. So Rashi Shita, remember, is that you could be mitzaref all of these things for one purpose, and then they will all be connected. Now, according to Rashi, what we're talking about over here is a salesman who is going around offering various types of feet. Now, if he just puts a little bit of feet of one kind, a little bit of feet of another kind in some kind of container, as he's getting out of his car to carry it into the farmer, comes along a wind and away goes the whole thing and flies all over the place. So that's not the way that he likes to show it. So what he does is he has a larger container in which he puts in different types of feet that now give you a solid body. And then he can point to the different parts and say, would you like how much of this and how much of this and how much of that? So that in the end, you make a single dugma from a mixture of all of these things. And that's the equivalent of making a single patchwork tumas moshav on the chamor. Tosfos says, is that the point? The point over here is that when you're talking about samples, sample sizes are always the same. That's all. I'm going to pick a bigger sample or a smaller sample. So if I've got a sample of etzah, I've got a sample of the straw, I've got a sample of processed straw, and so on and so forth, they're all the same size. I've got a little cup of this and a cup of this and a cup of that. That's the equivalent of everything being the same size in one set for tumah legabe tumas moshav. And over here, it's the members of the same set when it comes to salesmen and dugmaot. Great. Okay. Hamotzi ochlin, how about human footstuff? Oh, oops, foghorn. I mean, captain. Hamotzi ochlin kigro geret. How about human food? So anything that a human is going to eat, the shear is one grogeret. Now, this is, remember, learned from the Pusik, so to speak. It's one of the halacha l'moshe m'Sinai's in Eretz Chita v'Sora and so on. The shear that we used for the fig of the dvash was the grogeret, and it was referring to legabe hotza'af Shabbos, a remarkable idea. So over there, they would be mitzaref one with the other because they do have the same shear, and therefore there's no problem. Now, When we make the measurement of the grogeret, we are not referring to including shells, pits, and there's anything that is not edible, stems, or any type of suban, which is the bran that comes out initially. That's the shell, or the mursan, or even the bran which we like, which is the whole wheat bran. That's not included. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, that's all very good to say. You can't combine any of this stuff, but there is one case where you can. And that's talking about lentils. Lentil, the shell of the lentil, is normally cooked together with it. And because of that, it counts towards the shear of a grogeret. So you don't usually shell a lentil. And because of that, you end up eating the actual peel, the one that's close to the lentil. What? We don't include bran? Suminum, ursulum, and starfen? Richie even puts in the bran into the food in the first place. So for sure it should be included. So how could that be? Doesn't it say beferish in the Mishnah in Challah? V'atznan chameshet revaim kemach ve'od chayavim b'challah. That the shear of challah, which we had before, was 5/4 of a kav plus, and we went through the shear many times. Here's not the place again, including hein v'suban umursanan, including the brands, even the coarse brand, all goes into the shear of the 5/4 kav. So you see that you do include this in the food part. Says Abaye, yes, but there's different things that the shiurim are referring to. When it comes to talking about the chiyuv of challah, the lashon of the pasuk is chalata aretz. And that's like the things that the paupers eat. Everybody would eat. And that's true. An ani ochel pito b'isa belusa. I mean, after all of these poor people, they have to buy that awful whole wheat bread that no civilized person would eat. He's looking for his wonder bread, right? So these people, since they are going to eat it like that, as this dirty kind of unrefined flour, that is lechem ha'aretz. But when it comes to Shabbos, we want to give you a choshev shear. And that is the shear that the Mishnah is talking about, which is not including the subin. Reb Yehuda said, you don't conclude shells, but you do include the little klipot of the adashim because they're cooked with them. What do you mean, adashim? I mean, anybody who's, again, watched Richie eat peas, I mean, you've got peas with their pods, and you can have 10 peas in a pod, and you don't throw out the pod. You give it to Richie, who will eat the pod with the pea. So why in the world would we not include the pod? So Poland lo, and beans, we don't include pods. Ve'atanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, doesn't it say that Rabbi Yehuda includes the klipe polin, not only adashim? So how come he says over here we're talking only about the adashim? Lokasha. It depends if it's fresh or it's not fresh. If it's not fresh, you do not include the old beans for a very, very practical reason, as I'm sure has occurred to all of you in the actual use of beans in your food. If you didn't get rid of all of those little sticky things on the beans, and the beans are old, they look exactly like flies, and nobody likes it because it looks like your rice and your umjedra is filled with flies, and therefore people bedafka do not include it. And the reason is, atiki my time on Rebbe Avuv, nishnirin kizvuvim bekara, looks like you got flies in your plate, and therefore we can't include it in the shear of being chasher for the hotza'ah, which is, I find that to be adorable. Anyway, okay. So now we are ready for a Hadron Alach, Klal Gadol.